Three Candles Lit, written by November Smith and read by Dodificus. Lawrence could not sleep. The air was chill and wet, and every time he closed his eyes, he seemed to fall into nightmarish ponderings. To see the faces of dying soldiers and to hear their drowned whispers on the breeze. He was long past the age that dreams of ghosts should haunt him, as though the waking day did not hold enough nightmares enough. Try as he might, he could not quiet his mind, could only attempt not to fidget too obviously as he stared at the lightening sky. They had made a quick and quiet camp in the fields by Carlisle after flying through the night, and now man and dragon huddled together for warmth in the grey of dawn. Temerev, for all his quarrelling, had curled up readily enough by Iskierka's steaming side, only muttering to himself a little when she preened drowsily. It had been a brutal stretch of days, their party divided from the main line by a French patrol, forced to scatter temporarily with hopes of converging again further north. And when they had flung themselves down at last into a wooded vale, most had immediately collapsed where they landed, too weary to even complain about the lack of dinner. From where Lawrence lay upon Temeraire's forearm, he could see nearly the whole of the camp, see Granby tossing uneasily, huddled in a ridiculously rich red cloak that perfectly matched his dragon's hide. And Tharkay nearby, face soft and strangely young in sleep. Even the posted guards had nodded off. Lawrence could see them slumped together in a tangle of slack limbs. He could not quite blame them for negligence, when he knew none among them had slept for almost 2 days now. But he still did not like the idea of being without a watch so close to a town. He was sure he had just heard church bells on the morning breeze. He had thought they'd landed well clear of any settlement, but then it was difficult to judge distances in the dark, and they had all been exhausted. Perhaps they had flown off course. It was unpleasant to see everyone lying so still in the grey morning mist, especially after fighting his way through uneasy dreams, where he might have stroked Temeraire's nose or curled more closely to his chest for comfort and warmth any other day. He did not like to wake the dragon now, not after hard days of retreat and loss. When he finally gave in to restlessness and drew himself to his feet, meaning to go pace quietly somewhere, a flight of blackbirds scattered from the trees in an explosion as loud as a cannon shot in the morning stillness, their hoarse calls audible long after they had disappeared into the forest. Lawrence stood frozen a moment, pulse thudding, but the rest of the camp did not wake. When he picked his careful way through his Skirka's coils, Granby did stir and open his eyes, though he did not truly wake either. Only peered at Lawrence blearily, and murmured something unintelligible about daisies, then turned back over and buried his face closer to Tharkay's breast. Lawrence stopped a moment to wrestle with a fond smile and a feeling almost of jealousy. They looked so comfortable, and he had the almost overpowering urge to join them, to be entirely inappropriate this once, to throw himself down and steal a portion of Granby's cloak and not feel so alone. But he was still queerly restive, could not keep still, and they needed their sleep. He would only wake them if he stayed. He left reluctantly, hoping he could outwalk the strange tension in his bones and catch a few hours' rest before they all needed to be off again. He would need the sleep in the coming days. The leaves were as yet only a fine blur of green on the skeletal spring branches, and otherwise the woods were barren, bleak and stark, with a crooked black path that wound amongst grey trunks. The wood looked strangely familiar, though he had never been in this part of the country. Yet surely he had seen that low stone wall somewhere before, with the old ancient well at its border. And beyond the next turn of the path there would be an old Roman road lined with apple trees. I should turn back, he thought, when his feet moved him forward and around the bend. The road was there, and when he looked down the length of it, he could not see the end, only encroaching mist. The others will wonder where I am, he said distantly, and stared at his muddy, blackened boots. He needed to turn around. They are still sleeping, a voice said from above, and Lawrence was not at all surprised to see a young man in the branches of the nearest tree, face very pale and solemn. Hello, Will, the man said and smiled faintly. He did not make any move to get down, but stayed amongst the boughs, enthroned in young silvery leaves. Hello, Lawrence replied hesitantly, and took a step further along the stone road, boots ringing in the still air. Forgive me, but have we met? It was a long time ago, the man said, swinging a foot idly. He was dressed very finely in black riding leathers, but his accent was almost coarse, more like Granby's than Lawrence's own, a rolling lilt that made the simplest sentence sound of song. You have grown since then. Do you not remember me? No, Lawrence said, feeling abashed, and came to a stop at the base of the tree. I must wholeheartedly beg your pardon, but... He broke off as the man leaned forward from his seat, holding onto a branch overhead to peer into Lawrence's face. He smelled of green things and cold water and... We picked apples together, Lawrence said suddenly, and the man smiled at him. It was the sort of smile to catch one's breath, unexpected and sharply sweet. And Lawrence remembered it from summers as a child, who had slipped his governess and roamed through the old forgotten corners of the estate, where the stone walls were crumbled and the orchard had been grown over by wood. There he had made a great friend, an older boy who didn't think he was too young to bother with, like Henry and George did, and who told the most brilliant stories and taught him how to climb trees and speak to fish and tell the future from the clouds, and who apparently hadn't been as imaginary as everyone had said. You climbed the tallest tree, the young man said, and it was strange. He did not seem to have aged a day since Lauren had seen him last, face unlined and hair the glossy, perfect black of a raven's wing. And said you wanted to go higher still. I remember you very well, William Lawrence. And your name is John, Lawrence began, and then frowned, because that wasn't quite right. There was something he couldn't remember exactly. I am known as John to some, the young man agreed, his eyes gleaming. You can call me that if it pleases you. But it's not your real name, Lawrence protested. He felt queerly light-headed, as though he was still in the tallest branches of the apple tree, while the world was bending unsteady and fragile beneath him. There was something he wasn't remembering. Perhaps I will tell it to you later, said the man, who was sometimes John. With a strange half-smile, he reached out a hand. Lawrence took the apple from him, tawny red and gold, the dew cold on Lawrence's fingers, and abruptly remembered that he had not eaten since mid-afternoon the day before, and that neither had his men or his dragon. Temeraire, Lawrence said, shaking his head and trying to clear it. There was a distant part of his mind wondering about the apple, about a ripe apple in early spring plucked from bare branches. The mist was still heavy on the ground, and the sun was still low in the sky, but he felt quite sure that a good deal of time had passed regardless. He looked back at the woods. I should get back to him and the men. They sleep, the young man said carelessly, though I would be happy to meet your Temeraire. We do not have dragons yet in my kingdoms. What kingdoms are those? Lawrence asked, puzzled, and wondered again at the man's English, at the familiar and unfamiliar rhythm of it. How did you get here? All roads are one to me, the young man said, and his voice had the wide, empty sound of wind in it. I heard you were climbing higher than trees these days, and I thought I would look in on you. I'm glad I came. You have grown up well.
Not so well, Lawrence said, thinking of the last torturous months, felt his mouth twisting bitterly.
But his companion continued as though he had not spoken, and he was suddenly on the ground and standing quite close. Lawrence thought at first to protest, embarrassed, but when cool, deft fingers threaded through his hair, he forgot exactly what he had meant to say.
"You judge yourself too harshly," the young man said, tilting his head and considering Lawrence.
"I have always thought your eyes matchless among mortal men, and I am fond of your hair. You were also quite brave."
This added thoughtfully as he twined a lock about his pale fingers like a golden ring, and the faint pull of it did strange things to Lawrence's heart, made him breathe in quickly through his mouth.
"And it is not the common kind of bravery. Will you come with me, William Lawrence?"
"I have only ever done what is right," Lawrence said faintly. "It is not bravery. I must go back, that they will be missing me."
"If that is your choice, you may go," the man said, and did not release him, only tugged lightly and brushed a thumb over Lawrence's cheekbone.
"Are you sure you will not come, Will? Have you not missed me?"
And it was strange, but Lawrence rather thought he had, that he had felt the absence of the man's shape in the world without even knowing it. He hesitated, and perhaps was about to reach out a hand when there was a strange faint cracking to the air, as though someone had sharply thrown shut a window, and then the young man looked faintly surprised and annoyed.
"Lawrence, what the devil are you doing?" Granby called furiously from the edge of the wood, red coat startlingly bright amidst the colourless morning. Lawrence blinked and shook his head. "Who is that, and why did you leave without waking us, you damn fool?"
Tharkay was stumbling behind him, uncharacteristically clumsy, Granby tugging him along by the wrist, and they were both walking strangely, struggling forward as though caught in a great current or wind.
"John?" Lawrence said, confused, and took a step away from the apple grove toward his friends.
"It is John and Tharkay," he said, and made to go to them, but his companion caught him by the elbow and held him fast.
"They should not be awake," the young man said crossly, then looked at Lawrence and sighed.
And suddenly the pair were surging forward, the air no longer impeding them, and Granby's angry ranting grew louder with each step.
"Iskiyurka does not give me a patch of trouble that you do, you bastard. No one would wake up when I found you were missing,"
Granby growled, coming to a halt in front of them and breathing as fiercely as though he'd been running full tilt up a mountainside.
"I had a beast of a time getting Tharkay up at all. It took me a full half hour, and even then I had to dunk him in the stream, and none of the dragons will rouse."
"They are all fine," the young man interrupted testily, and Granby shot him a withering look before turning indignantly to Lawrence.
"Lawrence, we are leaving," he bit off, eyes flashing. "And you, whoever you are, you may go to the devil. I do not trust in you in the slightest. You must have drugged our men and our dragons. You have done something, and you are lucky I do not run you through."
At this, the man's mouth quirked slightly, and the two stared at each other. Granby's cheeks red with anger and exertion, and his body jittering uneasily, the other pale and motionless, very like a statue but for the movement of his black hair in the breeze.
"Well met, John Granby," the young man said finally, inclining his head.
"I give you my word no harm has come to your men or your dragons. They will wake at the first birdsong." He regarded Granby thoughtfully a moment longer, not seeming the least concerned that Granby's hand was on the hilt of his sword, then looked back to Lawrence. With a hot flush, Lawrence realised they were still standing close together, nearly chest to chest, and wondered what Granby and Tharkay must think of it.
"Will you not come with me, William?" the man asked a last time.
There was a faint wintry edge to his voice,
and the hand that he reached out to touch Lawrence's cheek seemed to touch more than skin, seemed to sink to the core of him. At this, Tharke, who had been slumping damply against Granby's shoulder and blinking sleepily, narrowed his eyes. He shook himself like a wet cat and seemed to wake up entirely furious. "He is staying with us," Tharke stated, clear and fierce, and reached out to wrap a hand around Lawrence's wrist, glaring up at the man's pale, impassive face. "He is staying here. You cannot have him." "No," the man said, dropping his hand from Lawrence's cheek. He bent his gaze on Tharke, who flinched but held firm, his hand an anchor on Lawrence's skin, and the day seemed suddenly much brighter, like a film of gauze and cobwebs had been brushed away. "No," Lawrence repeated quietly, and the man's eyes sharpened. Lawrence stepped instinctively in front of Tharke and Granby, threw a protective arm up to shield them and said it again. "No." There was a moment where the world went very still, as though the very stones beneath their feet had breath to hold. Then the man sighed irritably and folded his arms over his chest, looking for all the world like a sulky teenager. A few drops of rain fell sullenly at their feet. "I suppose I must concede," the young man said, and then paused, flicking a glance at Granby, who had by this point unsheathed his sabre and was holding it pointedly close to the man's throat. "Though I would be glad to have the three of you join my court if that is what bothers you. You needn't be separated from your companions." "No," Lawrence said heatedly, and glared at the man. "You know damn well that we do not wish to abandon our country and leave during the midst of a war. I cannot understand in the first place why you would... "Oh, do you not understand?" the young man asked, sly smile back on his face, and quick as a stooping hawk pulled Lawrence in even closer. Lawrence's eyes flew open and Tharke's hand went painfully tight on his wrist. But the young man only smiled into the kiss, tilted his head to better fit his mouth to Lawrence's. He tasted of rain and sky, and Lawrence found himself kissing back helplessly, speechless and utterly lost when the man finally pulled away. "I will ask again one day, William," the man said, and only smiled wider when Granby made an indignant, outraged noise. "You have grown up very well," he said, almost gently, and pressed another kiss, cool and soft, to the corner of Lawrence's mouth. "Remember that." In the next blink, the man was gone, the air ringing with his absence, and with him went the mist and the rain and the very road they stood on, and they were left blinking in sunshine. If it weren't for the apple still in his hand and Tharke clutching bruises into his wrist, Lawrence would have suspected himself sleepwalking, which, to be frank, would have been wholly preferable to standing in a dew-damp field in his shirt sleeves, with his two closest friends staring at him in horror and a kiss still tingling on his lips. He still felt faintly as though he were dreaming. Surely he had not been considering. What had he been considering? "You are the most infuriating person I have ever met," Granby finally hissed, after a good deal of sputtering and glaring. "I do not even know. What do we have to do, Lawrence? Take shifts to make sure you don't do something blitheringly stupid? Do we need to get you a bell or a leash or..." "What the devil do you mean by that?" Lawrence said indignantly, at which Granby grabbed Lawrence by the collar and hauled him in, shaking him. "You just went off with the King of Fairy for a jaunt in the woods, you absolute idiot! Do you not give the slightest damn for your safety now?" Granby shouted, and Lawrence thought that was a bit much. "It's not as though I knew," Lawrence protested, colouring and trying to shake himself free. But Granby had a death grip on his shirt and Tharke was hemming him in from the side, hand still clamped tightly around his wrist. "I think what Granby is trying to say," Tharke drawled with an undercurrent of anger in his voice that made Lawrence freeze uncertainly, is that we would appreciate it if you would kindly stop trying to get yourself killed at every corner. I just went for a walk, Lawrence said faintly, and then went quiet and still. He should not have left the camp, they were right. He had abandoned his post again, and for what? Because he could not sleep? Because he had nightmares? The emperors of France and the princes of China weren't enough. Oh no, not for Will Lawrence, Granby was continuing furiously, shaking Lawrence a little with each word, and Lawrence did not move to stop him. No, you have to get the attention of every insane monarch in this world and the next, and then you kissed him? You bloody moron, how could you kiss him? He kissed me, not the other way around, Lawrence protested automatically, and then flushed hotly, because, whatever else, he had kissed the man back, and, oh God, Granby and Tharkay had seen it. You liked it, Tharkay said suddenly in a low, wondering voice, and Granby's fingers tightened on his collar, brushed against the skin of his neck. So, is that all you have to do then? Granby rasped, eyes wide and queerly bright. If I kiss you, will you just stay? I would never ask such a thing of you, Lawrence said stiffly, painfully, and managed to jerk free of Granby's grip, only to be pulled in closer by Tharkay. I know I have disappointed you, but it will not happen again. Lawrence, you idiot, Tharkay said, and Lawrence was taken aback by how flushed and rumpled he looked, hair falling damp into his eyes and shirt coming undone at the throat. It is not like that. He hesitated, then slowly, giving Lawrence ample time to move away, leaned in to press his lips against the corner of Lawrence's mouth, dry and hot, and for a moment all Lawrence knew was the pounding of his own heart. Ah, what? Lawrence said faintly and tried to catch his breath. I don't understand. The sun was higher in the sky, the bare branches of the wood almost cheerful against the bright blue, and somewhere a lark was singing. When Granby let go of his shirt and stepped back, face flushed and eyes locked somewhere in the distance, Lawrence fought a strange feeling of disappointment, made a check gesture in his direction that he was sinkingly sure Tharkay noticed. I would stay anyway, he didn't say. But. Just be, Granby said, and had to clear his throat, defying all the laws of biology by somehow getting even redder than he had before. Just be more careful, Lawrence. We can't lose you. We should be getting back. Lawrence could not move for a moment, still reeling, before he hesitantly called out Granby's name. And this was a name he knew, a John that was true and rough and human. But Granby was already headed back through the small stand of trees, fighting through the bramble and brush towards camp, where even now Lawrence could hear the panicked rumblings of their dragons. Ask again later, Tharkay said, fingers warm on Lawrence's pulse as they followed in Granby's wake. He had a bright, curving smile on his face, and Lawrence found himself smiling back, lighter now than he had been in months, strangely buoyant and hopeful. I am sure he will say yes. The end.